This is CKLN 88.1 FM, licensed by the Canadian Radio, Television and Telecommunications Commission to broadcast in stereo at 88.1 MHz on the FM band. CKLN is owned and operated by CKLN Radio Incorporated, which is located at Ryerson University within the Student Campus Center in Toronto, Canada.
At the time of license application, CKLN filed a comprehensive promise of performance with the Commission, and within that document made specific commitments to its operations and programming. The license issued by the CRTC requires CKLN to honor these commitments made in the promise of performance and to comply with the FM radio broadcasting regulations.
A copy of the license with the promise of performance and conditions of licensing is available for inspection by any member of the public at the offices of the Commission and at the offices of CKLN during business hours. Radio frequencies are public property in Canada. CKLN invites your comments and inquiries.
Our mailing address is 55 Gould Street, Toronto, Ontario, postal code M5B1E9, phone number 416-979-5251.
Thank you for tuning in to CKLN 88.1 FM, and good morning.
Big Brother, mainstream media, government cover-ups. You want answers? Well, so does he. It's Alex Jones on the GCN Radio Network.
What do you mean I don't support your system? I go to court when I have to. What do you mean I can't get to work on time? Got nothing better to do. What do you mean I don't pay my bills? What do you think I'm broke? Huh?
Ladies and gentlemen, we are live worldwide on this Wednesday, July 14th, 2010 edition. This is the most important broadcast I have ever done in my 15 years of transmission. The most important broadcast I have ever done, except for maybe my 9/11/2001 transmission, when I laid it all on the line when nobody else would and told it like it was. You have epiphanies. You have basically brainstorms, moments where you realize that you've been right about everything. And the picture that was already clear becomes crystal clear, crystal clear. I'm going to say this succinctly. There is a 100% chance that the United States will completely collapse into a road warrior-like scenario if we do not address the problems now and point out that this is being engineered by design. Now, this road warrior collapse will only go on for a few years. It is being orchestrated to fully break the United States. This is an economic/military coup d'etat, not just against the United States, but against the entire Western world. The globalists have already destroyed and leveled and annihilated and decimated the third world, and it's all been declassified at the IMF and World Bank brag in their internal memos that they have orchestrated it. They are doing the exact same thing here, but with a 21st century high-tech overlay. This is a mega 100% red alert, ladies and gentlemen, red alert. We could go into the full collapse as early as next year, perhaps even sooner, but within the next 2 years, it is a 100% guaranteed fact that this society is completely collapsing by design. And then what they have to offer after they've engineered the collapse and they've trained people to fully submit and accept a new way of life, living under the boot of the New World Order. It is so important what we are going to be covering today. Larry Pratt's joining us on the Second Amendment front for 30 minutes later. Richard Reeves for 30 minutes in studio dealing with the NAFTA superhighways and the toll roads that they're putting in all over the nation. In the last few years, there's been massive resistance to it, so they played possum and claimed that they weren't going to do it. Now they're back with a vengeance. This is a key part of the globalist funding mechanism worldwide. We'll be exposing that coming up as well. So you'll definitely want to stay with us for Richard Reeves in the middle of the next hour, then Larry Pratt joining us at the beginning of the third hour. But I want to be extremely clear with everyone here today. Here are just some of the data points that when we come back from break, I'm going to break down and explain why I've come to this realization. Number one, the mainstream media is talking about total, complete collapse, worse than the Great Depression everywhere. Of course, they've been engineering this. They hid that fact from you for the last few years, as we told you they would. But before they fully collapse our nation into the world government, that they would announce it. That is now happening. This is just the last day and a half. Central banks start to abandon the U.S. dollar. And who could blame them is the quote. CNN, London Telegraph, Chinese rating agency strips Western nations of AAA status. Both parties mold raising retirement age. Washington Times. Crisis awaits world banks as trillions come due. The big crash, America plunges into depression. This is all mainstream news in your face. That dovetails with all these police departments announcing that they're not going to stop people for assault, for poisoning, for robbery, for burglary. I'm going to explain what's happening and the most important information when we come back. Here's the headline. Top Clinton official. I'm getting chills. Only a terror attack can save Obama. Get ready.
This is CKLN 88.1 FM, licensed by the Canadian Radio Television and Telecommunications.
CKLN listeners, it is the 15th day of July, 2010. You are listening to CKLN's Rude Awakening Morning News Show. This is your host, BK, a.k.a. Black Christian, on Mondays, Tuesdays, Wednesdays, and Thursdays from 6 to 7 a.m., as well as Mondays, on Word of Mouth Mondays, I host from 7 to 8 p.m., often do interviews. But why? Aw, oh, hell no. I got to explain that to people once in a while, just so that, well, okay. I got an email from a fan of the show, and I love my fans of the show, and shout out to all the fans of the show, all the people listening at this time in the morning, because it's great. It's awesome. Here, I'm going to read this email just for the hell of it. Just because sometimes when I read things I wrote, they sound better than thinking of things to say. Hi, Redacted. Redacted is my, intelligence name for not wanting to reveal their name. Hi, Redacted. Good meeting you both, and it's great to have Redacted listening. That's you guys. Please let me know if you folks want any specific questions answered or investigated. I'll address more of your previous email concerns on my show. It's always great to get feedback that asks, what can we actually do? In quotes. I'm working on the answer for 5 years. There are at least 500 useful things that we can do, so that's not the issue at all. There are many things that have been proven to work that have brought us to the point where we can say to anyone in Toronto that we think, quote, 9/11 was an inside job, and 80% of them won't flinch. That's great news. There are even things that millions of, quote, conspiracy theorists, or curious folk, hear daily on the Alex Jones Show and elsewhere. Yet many of the same people will still ask that same question. It's been driving me completely nuts for a while. I told a friend who heard the question that, or I told a friend who asked the question that, if I gave him a list of 25 things that he could do, then what would he do? He said probably nothing. I said exactly. That's the biggest sticking point, and it proves the mind control that we're all under. We sort of, quote, just don't feel like, unquote, doing anything. That's all. That's why I weave in so many inspirational ideas into my show, to help show us how to find them. Letter goes on. IMHO, in brackets, I guess. If I lose 10,000 insecure fans of my show who are doing nothing, but manage to replace them with 10 fans who do stuff, then the city of Toronto wins and Canada is in the playoffs. If not, then we'll just all know that we're losing and that we're going to lose because the bad guys play to win and we just play with ourselves. I can't see how anyone would selfishly want me to serve their pure entertainment interests instead of helping to motivate and advise the people who can do stuff to help our families and friends avoid being murdered by the New World Order shortly. And if they do complain, then it just is what it is. And it? Got a sack out? Please call in at 416-595-1655 between 6 to 7 a.m. as you'd like. Cheers, BK, with the obligatory smiley face, which you need to put in your email. Otherwise, you know, people these days might just take you wrong, because they often, you know, people are so sad. I remember this years ago, from writing emails and being trying to be fairly neutral about them and having people think I was mad just because I was serious. And, you know, and in this case, all right, so what can you do? Well, you know, a couple years ago, 2007, I walked around with a little digital camera and some printouts off the internets, and I asked people what they thought of the SPP.gov North American Union. I asked about 40 Canadians, found about 8 or 9 out of 10 or so, you know, were against it. Now, they, you know, most of them hadn't heard of it, but you know, as soon as I showed them the printouts off the internet, they were like, okay, you know, I believe that. There's a little mainstream thingy there. There's a little another thingy there. There's the official SPP.gov website. And, yeah, it looks like you're doing this, you know, for, because you're serious, and there's just no other reason to do this. So I got a whole bunch of amazing, you know, normal responses from people, and I posted them up on YouTube. Now, YouTube's taken down 3 of my YouTube channels. The first one for sort of my fault, I guess. No big deal. A couple of Jon Stewart clips and so on. The other two were purely censorship, just whacking me for showing things in our culture that can reveal to other people in our culture how we feel. And in a culture that, you know, looks to polls to determine, you know, what we should say, it's good to do our own. And it's good to do streeters. And it's good to, you know, sort of show people, show Canadians how Canadians feel so that they have some confidence to feel themselves possibly the same way in opposition to BS that they may not have the courage to call as BS if you don't, you know, help them out. So you can do that. I emailed up to 7,000 people, you know, several ideas on what the hell was going on and what we could do about it. And how did I do that? Well, I harvested publicly available email addresses. And my computer's all frozen. Anyway, doesn't matter. So I harvested publicly available email addresses. And that's better. Because I just went around the net. I just picked them up. And I was like, oh, okay, you guys work for activist groups, organizations, foundations, whatever. And I'm going to email you. And I sent out up to 7,000. And no word of a lie, it's all on my email accounts. Until Google stopped me from doing this, because I could send up to 1,000 per Google account, two 500 email blasts, and then finally Google went, all right, we're just going to shut all of them down. and they wouldn't let me use them after a while, blah, blah, blah. So I don't even know what the hell happened. But the bottom line is that I was pumping out info for the last few years. My e-blasts were famous, and I could still do that again, but none of these things is to be the guy that does this. I'm not the interview streeter guy. I'm not the crazy poster guy. I'm not even the crazy radio guy. You know, I do this in the hopes that someone else does this. And because this is just to prove that it could be done in this culture. So you can harvest some emails on the internet. And no word of a lie, as I was about to say, I only got a couple of responses back, negative ones per email, and 2-3 responses, you know, positive ones per email. And people would say, please unsubscribe me. And I'd say, no problem, take care, smiley face. And that was it. And I'd take them off the list. And if I accidentally didn't, then I'd apologize again, and then they'd be gone. And so out of 7,000, 2 coming back per. And some people might block, some people might not like it, whatever. But again, you just go with the metrics you have to work with. So there's a million things that we can do in this culture. The number is 416-595-1655 to call in later. Right now, Webster Griffin Tarpley on the Great Depression, using the same tricks as the last Great Depression on the Guns and Butter radio show, which means we can avoid this. You know, we don't need...
Unemployment goes up.
We don't need to see this.
Go down. Production goes down. Now, after about 6 months of this, you get the first big breakthrough of the Nazi Party. And that's the other thing that I think is important to stress. That the brutal austerity doesn't just destroy the economy, and it does destroy the economy, but it also destroys the political system. You cannot go on with representative government and democratic institutions indefinitely with extremely high levels of unemployment.
I'm Bonnie Faulkner. Today on Guns and Butter, Webster Tarpley. Today's show, the collapse of Europe as the second phase of two world depressions. Webster Tarpley is an economic historian, author, and lecturer. He is author of Against Oligarchy, Surviving the Cataclysm, A Study of the World Financial Crisis, 9/11 Synthetic Terror, Made in the USA, and co-author of George Bush, The Unauthorized Biography. His latest books are Obama, The Postmodern Coup, The Making of a Manchurian Candidate, and Obama, The Unauthorized Biography. Today we discuss his paper, Austria 1931 equals Greece 2010, The Collapse of Europe as the Second Phase of Two World Depressions, including the three waves of the Depression of the 1930s, the October 1929 New York stock market crash, the summer 1931 banking panic and collapse of Europe, including the destruction of the world monetary system, which depended on the British pound, and the subsequent banking panic and closure of the banks in the United States. Webster Tarpley, welcome.
Thank you very much.
How would you compare the current depression to what occurred in the 1930s, or is there a comparison?
Well, I think there's a very close comparison, and I think, you're very right to call this a depression, and I guess that's the first thing we better get clear about. We heard people saying that this is a great recession or a crisis of subprime lending or some other explanations, and this is all basically malarkey. It is a world economic depression. It is of cataclysmic proportions. There is no doubt about it. On the whole, the potential is worse than what you had in the 1930s for various reasons. It is a breakdown crisis of an entire system. It's really the breakdown crisis of the entire post-1945 dollar-based system of U.S. and British banking domination over the world. And it's not a business cycle event. In other words, it's not some kind of a recession and recovery process of the type that has occurred, you know, many times since 1945. And above all, the word I think that's important to work with is disintegration. It's already a disintegration of the existing financial banking and currency system. People think of something like the crash of 1929 or the crash of 1987. Those are collapses. That's when stocks can lose half their value, or they can lose 90% of their value, or whatever it is. That's a collapse. That's certainly quite bad. But as long as the stock market keeps going and the banks keep going, the institutions are still there. We're now in a terrain where the likely events are disintegration events. In other words, the stock market is no longer there, or the bank is bankrupt, or the world currency system, such as it is, ceases to exist. So I think that's an important premise. And I say this because you have these Austrian school and Chicago school charlatans running around saying, well, you know, this is it's a recession, and there's a business cycle, and the business cycle will lift you out of it. That is a very, very dangerous misconception, to think that there's some automatic business cycle that lifts you out. Generally speaking, you get out of a depression when you change your policies and go for an economic recovery and pull yourself out of it. But there's no automatic recovery. Now, to get to your question after that long introduction, the comparison, I think, is to the Great Depression of the 1930s. It's really all we have to work with. And I think it's really astounding to find. I find it almost uncanny to see the very, very close parallels between the Depression of the 1930s and what has been going on now for about the last 2 years. And I would say, first of all, that people have to remember that there's much more to the Depression of the 1930s than just the New York stock market panic of 1929. That is the beginning, but it's certainly only the beginning. I think if you go back to the 1930s, you'll see that the Depression essentially came in three waves, three large groups of events that destroyed the world financial system, and in the process destroyed the underlying world economy of industrial production, employment, consumption of goods and services, world trade, and so forth. So let's just go back and try to sketch these, because people really are not familiar with this. I find people are surprised that there are three waves. They think it's really only one, and it's not. So first of all, we do have the panic in the New York stock market in 1929, and that then begins a long-term collapse in prices in the United States stock arena. But that's only the beginning. What you then have is about a year and a half later, 18 months later, you have the collapse of the European banking system. And this begins about 79 years ago, right now, the spring of 2010. We have to go back to May and June and the summer, the spring and summer of 1931. And this starts in Austria. It starts with the bankruptcy of a large bank in Austria, the Kreditanstalt of Vienna. It's a bank that had weakened itself very much by currency speculation in the French franc during the 1920s. So by 1931, it was on the verge of collapse, and then it did collapse. It ironically collapsed at a time when everybody thought that a recovery from the stock market panic of 1929 was at hand. But the events of the summer of 1931, the second wave of the Depression, the Austrian banking system blows up, and most of the leading banks go bankrupt. There's a banking panic, a run on the banks. That soon spreads to Hungary. Interesting, because Hungary has just been in the news in the last couple of weeks. Hungary then goes. And then you have a banking panic that essentially tears through all of Eastern Europe. Basically, everything east of Germany is bankrupt within about a month in May, June of 1931. That's Poland, Romania, Bulgaria, Yugoslavia, Greece, and so forth. And then you get something really big, which is the bankruptcy of the German banking system. And this is full of tremendous historical portent. And it starts with a bank called the Danat Bank, D-A-N-A-T. And interesting for our purposes today, the reason that the Danat Bank is so weak and vulnerable is that they are pulled into the bankruptcy of a department store chain, Karstadt, which is there today, and it's going bankrupt again today. But above all, a company called the North German Wool Carding Company. And the North German Wool Carding Company does what? They speculate in futures. And I stress futures, derivatives. Futures are derivatives, and this North German wool carding company was speculating in wool futures. So this, in the time, say, of June into July of 1931, blows up the entire German banking system. Panic runs, bank shutdown, Deutsche Bank, Dresdner Bank, the banks that are basically still around today, more or less, they all go bankrupt. And it essentially collapses the entire banking system then of Central Europe. And that then leads to the German government seizing these banks. A bank holiday is declared, right? They close the banks for a week or two to try to save them, but they can't do it. So that's really a big thing, and you can say the coming of Hitler is to some degree foreshadowed by the fact that the entire German banking system collapses in this German banking crisis of the late spring and summer of 1931. And then the second wave goes on to the biggest event of all. Really, if you want to think of a central event of the world economic depression of those years, it's not really the New York stock market collapse, because that's simply a collapse. It's a disintegration event, and that is the British pound. The British pound had gone back on the gold standard after World War I under the leadership of Sir Winston Churchill, who insisted on having a very, very high gold content for the British pound. He laid the basis for this phase of the panic. Very ill-advised move in terms of the policy. So by after the German banks collapse, so in July and August and into September, there starts a panic run on the British pound and on the gold backing of the British pound. People get nervous and they say, I want my gold back. I've left my gold in London. I want to bring it out. This is the way the financial system worked in those days. And then we get the really big event, September 21st, 1931. The British go bankrupt. They default. The Bank of England stops paying in gold. They suspend the convertibility of the British pound into gold. And the reason this is so important is that the pound is the centerpiece, the linchpin of the only monetary system that you had in the world at the time. In other words, international trade was overwhelmingly done through a bill of exchange denominated in British pound sterling and drawn on a London bank. And that was how, you know, commodities could go from Africa to Latin America, or from Europe to Asia, or from the U.S. to Europe, or whatever it was. It all went through London. And once the pound had blown out, that blew out the entire system of financing world trade. A lot of people parenthetically say, oh, the cause of the depression is the Holy Smoot tariff in the United States, and that strangled world trade. I'm afraid not. That's not what did it. It was the British essentially wrecking the only monetary system that the world had. So this is the second wave. Austria, Hungary, Eastern Europe, Germany, Britain, all crashing. Now, I think you can begin to see the eerie parallels that we've got. This time around, we had the initial event was September 2008, which was the panic around Lehman Brothers, bankrupt, AIG, huge derivatives losses. We had Merrill Lynch, we had Wachovia, we had Citibank then going bankrupt in November. All of these banks then bailed out, so in some cases repeatedly bailed out, all because of derivatives. So now we're about 1.5 years into the crisis, right? If you go from September, October to 2008 into, say, April, May, June of 2010, it's about 1.5 years. And what do we have now? We don't have Austria quite yet, but we have Greece, we have Portugal, we have Spain, we have Hungary, Italy, Ireland, maybe Britain very soon on the brink. And I think this is, unless something is done, and I always stress that the purpose of reciting these historical parallels is not so people should think that they're condemned or doomed to repeat the past. The point is, if you don't do something quite energetic to get out of this, this is where you're going. This is where you're likely to be headed. So for various reasons, we now have the collapse of Europe as the second wave of this depression, just as it was of the previous.
You ever be in the club, man? You get in a fight. People that you don't even know. You feel like you wanna hit something, your fist clenches, you're pissed. You just wanna get some of your shit. Jump on this, you're about to get your shit pushed, and I'm just inches away from splitting your shit wide open. No stitches can save you. Die with your eyes open. You hope this isn't the way you end up going.
And we're back, CKLN listeners. Sorry, the computer's sticking a little bit, so I'm trying to pull some files, but who the hell knows what's going on? A guy that might, though, is a gentleman named Chris. He's one of the listeners here to the show. Chris, are you on air?
I am here. Can you hear me?
I can hear you. What's going on, sir?
Heading to my regular construction job.
That's great. You know what? I live in a place, and somebody constructed it. And if they hadn't, I couldn't live there. So thank you so much to you and all the other guys doing what you do and doing a great job.
Thank you, man. I get a little here, so I hope it sounds okay on the radio. I'm not listening to my radio.
No, it's good that you can't listen to your radio when you're on the air because the echo comes through. Cell phone's a bit choppy, but please do speak loud and clear and share some of your thoughts here on your publicly owned airwaves. And do not forget that in case you don't like what's happening on them.
Okay, so this is what I think I could share with you. There are two things. One, I think there's an interesting demographic that should be listening to you, and some do. And it's construction workers like me. The other, which we've kind of sort of talked about. I think one of the small stories that I mentioned this earlier was just a quick G20 thing. It sounds like I'm breaking up, so hopefully it's working still.
You're good. My levels were a little messy here, so these headphones are horrible. I'm currently using so, but please continue.
Okay, no problem. I guess my only little G20 story, and I must admit I'm not as super active as many are that listen to your show, partially due to life, family, and whatever.
Well, but, I'll tell you this, Chris, if more people were super active, I wouldn't be yelling.
But there was a G20 raid on some protester organizers that lived around the corner from our house, and I mean, they... peaceful protesters, and they show up with 20 guys and SWAT guys and guns for nothing. And it was partially because it was early in the whole process of the G20 process, and it hadn't gotten very busy yet, and it seemed like we have nothing to do. We need to go out and find these people that are going to cause havoc, and I think they targeted a lot of the wrong people. Anyways, I didn't want to get too deep into the conspiracy, because I do agree with most of the stuff you say, and I have been researching. I do appreciate the links that you send in your emails, because I think they're important for people to follow. As a parent, what I was going to say is that there are two things to me that I think that, right off the top of my head, that I think that we can do as a community, as a group. One is this water situation. I think the fluoride in the water is something that I'm going to continue to talk to you about. I'm going to do something personally for my own family. But I think that there's an awareness, I don't know, there's something that we need to do to talk to people to say, hey, how come Montreal doesn't do it? How come Vancouver doesn't do it? Why does Toronto do it? That doesn't make sense to me. The other is vaccinations. I'm a father of three and absolutely agree with the vaccinations. I have vaccinated my children, but in a much, much slower rate. And it's amazing to see how much more. I have a 20-month-old. How quickly they want to start injecting your child. At 3 months, they want to start injecting your child.
Sometimes, right after they're born, I read an article in People magazine by some celebrity woman who came out anti-vaccine in the way that a lot of people do softly, where she said they just kept delaying it. You know, they waited until 2 years, and then 2 years showed up. And she was hinting in the article that she wasn't, you know, she wanted the baby to be old enough to handle all the toxins in vaccines. So she was really trying to reveal that. And I apologize, Chris, for just mentioning that, because that's why I say here on the show that if I met you and you were a parent, I'd just give you a piece of paper with all the info or a DVD, and I just wouldn't bug you, because I you know, I've been vaccinated, you've been vaccinated, we've all been vaccinated, and we take in toxins every day, and so do your kids, and it's a shame, but our livers and our immune systems and so on, we do reasonably well considering the crap that we ingest. And so, but there are sometimes guilt issues. with people that that have vaccinated. And so it's best to just give them the info and let them process it. And I've come back after 2-3 weeks, a month, from the same, say, shawarma guy where I did this, after seeing him and his wife and his newborn in the shawarma place and going, I got to get something in this guy's pocket. Like, I like this guy. And then, you know, he's really friendly, and he actually appreciates the fact that I don't talk about it. But he gives me one of those knowing looks like, dude, I'm glad that, you know, you're doing this, even though it's a little heavy for me.
No, and that is something that I mean, I'll be honest, I've done the same thing. None of my kids got any vaccinations until they were about a year old. And to be fair to my doctor, actually, our doctor is a fairly good pediatrician and fairly well known, but she did not force anything. She goes, look, a lot of parents do this, and she was completely okay with it. So I think a lot of people generalize that doctors are in the pocket of big pharma, blah 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 blah. But there are definitely, and I from the website, you can see that there are a ton of doctors that do support the non-vaccination thing. But I think what there's the soft component of it, like you said, which is, you know what, I'll give my kid the vaccinations, partially because there is the threatening of, well, you can't come to school if you don't have these vaccinations, blah blah blah.
It's not true.
But you know what I can do is I can hold off.
And it's not true. There are legal vaccine exemption forms at VRAN.org. And my colleagues at TorontoTruthSeekers.com and I were handing out hundreds of them last summer. And we get parents, because we were there every Saturday for months, and the guys are still on the streets every Saturday. I drop by and say, what's up, once in a while. But I'm running a sort of 3-week social experiment starting on Canada here to kind of gauge the public's mood about these things and skip, you know, harassing conspiracy theorists, you know, to do stuff when, you know, they're marginalized and sometimes disempowered in their own way. So, you know, it's a little tougher for them than it is for normally confident people in some cases. But I digest. We were handing out tons of vaccine exemption forms, and parents were loving it. We get parents who'd send other parents to pick them up on Saturday, you know, and they'd come by our table going, yeah, my friend told me, can I get one of those? Can I get four of those? And you know, we were all paying for the photocopies ourselves and hanging out on the streets, taking our own time to do it. So, you know, the idea is that people appreciate this. And I'm going to prove that. And I'm going to prove you can walk around, you know, saying, so what's the deal, riders? Would you excuse me while I feel my nuts? And just yelling that at the public underneath my breath, kind of mouthing the words to get myself going, and still have people be cool with it. And I'll prove everything. And I'm not just trying to say that about me. I'm just trying to make the point to you and everybody else out there that, well, first of all, I sure as hell can't do everything. It's a big city and a big country. It was 30 million people. We could reach them all in a week if we wanted to. But I sure as hell can't do everything. But I can show you, just living in the same damn city, what you can do, and what you can do probably easier than me in some ways, while, of course, more difficult than others, because I do get a free pass from some people who know what I've been up to for a few years, while I do get, you know, bothered by people who don't like the intensity with which I'm coming. So it's a mixed bag, but the bottom line is, men can play through this, and you, free J-Sonic, if not free Masonic construction workers, should be meeting in dark rooms, you know, drinking beers, smoking cigarettes, and going, all right, the ladies are upstairs watching whatever the hell they're watching. Let's figure out how to take on the bad guys in a serious, organized, and focused way so nobody on the block gets shot again. Sorry for the diatribe, Chris. Please continue.
No problem. Well, I'm being the construction guy, I'm almost at work. But my last two thoughts were, A, yes, I'm big on the, please, people, if you're listening, the vaccine thing I think is very important. Two, I know you gotta get asked that question, like, what can I do that's realistic? What can I do that can actually make a difference? And I do appreciate the email that you sent back, because quite honestly, I am at least taking a couple of items step by step to do my own version of how can I make a difference. So
I think that's great, Chris.
Show people.
I think it's great,
the man's
Chris.
Not crazy, and he's speaking some good stuff. So I gotta go. But thank you for having me on. I wasn't expecting this.
No, sir. Have a great day at work. Say hi to your homeboys for me, and we'll catch up next week.
We sure will.
Cheers.
All right, man. Take care. Bye.
And that was Chris, the construction worker, breaking down the game for us. And yeah, no, it's amazing out there. A couple of quick things on the idea of what you can do. Our culture encourages us to do anything and feel good. And so, you know, everything I'm talking about, even when I'm barking like a maniac here on the radio, is within the context of generations of mind control. However, it's also within the context of us having to beat it. Because if we don't beat it, then we're kind of screwed. And so, you know, it is what it is, and we can make it what we want to make it if we simply do, you know, what's been done, what teenagers are doing. You know, and I'll get guys, and not Chris per se, not any of his friends, but I know a gentleman, for example, who can build a house. You know, I can't even fix a storm door. I'm not a guy. My dad can. I joke with my buddies. We joke around that we're not half the men that these guys are. We're not half the men our fathers were in terms of our technical ability. But I got dudes that can build a house. You know, for $250 at Canadian Tire. Give them $2.50. They'll buy the right stuff, A-Team style or MacGyver. And yet he says, you know, to me, I don't know how to make a freaking flyer. And I'm thinking, all right, is there anything you don't know how to do? Google it. Figure it out. And the fact is that there are high school kids making flyers for their high school proms or to promote their mixtapes in Toronto, or they're asking their buddies who do know how to, you know, use Microsoft PowerPoint and these are really simple. You know, and I've personally created templates. You can find a bunch at TorontoTruthSeekers.com in the files section. And so all you got to do is replace the text. You don't want to promote what you want to believe in.com, my website, no problem. Change it. You don't like the way I worded something, change it. You want to swap an image, change it. But the product is there. And for 3 cents per black and white, 8.5 by 11 page, and then $1 per cut at Kinko's, they can be cut professionally and not be all choppy and stuff. You know, for $20, you can have like 6,000, you know, 1 by 3 inch flyers that have vran.org and the risk of vaccines and a little sentence or two explaining why, you know, this information is compelling. And if we all did that, then we get all this stuff out of our environment. So there's a million things we can do, but our culture encourages us to be happy for doing things like recycling. And the Now magazine, today's Now magazine that just came out, is trying to make us happy for paying new eco fees, saying it'll save us money, and in a Pavlovian smack the dog in the nose with a newspaper kind of way, it'll force us to change our buying habits. And I've been bitching about this since 06, 07, you know, with my co-host Mark Bills and I on the air, I think 07, after the global warming stuff was launched in March of 2007, and the big global warming climate change fraud, the anti-human green eugenics agenda that wants us to worry about the weather in 20 years instead of human beings now. And as a result, we can see what happens to them. And us. And anyway, so I'm going up this for a while because my co-host Mark Bills, proudly, like a lot of people, and I love Mr. Bills. Shout out to Mr. Bills. You know, it was awesome riding with him for 3 years. You know, and he's got a permanent seat at the table here, you know, Friday night Shabbat dinner style. Like, if he ever wants to call in, drop by and talk, whatever the hell he wants to say, it's on. But he did say that, you know, he wouldn't mind paying a little more, you know, to save the environment. That seemed like a reasonable thing because the environment's really important and stuff. And I told him, you know, slow down, homeboy. Like, first of all, is it going to save the environment? Second of all, what's a little more and when does a little become a lot? You know, because that's where it goes with this. And so reading the Now magazine today, you know, the way they're selling the new eco fees. And oh, that's why. All right. Got it. And reading about the new eco fees and so on, just drive me absolutely crazy. Because I you know, you can see the programming. I'm in the annex yesterday. I see a convenience store there, and there's a big Think Green, you know, come here to refill your toner and ink cartridge things. And they've got us to think green, not knowing that green is mean. So, you know, we got to get the word out about the global warming, climate change fraud, about the ClimateGate email scandal, revealing the top UN climate change scientists know they're lying, 1,000 emails and 4,000 documents. And the Club of Rome's work on this, where they're going to sell us global warming to create a global government, to fund a global government through all these eco fees and taxes. Because we don't even ask. And even the 5 cents a bag, that's how they start. Incrementalism. And, you know, on the Alex Jones show, Jones also said yesterday that there are certain things that used to set them off for like in a whole week. that happened a few years ago. Things like Obama advisor, says that the only thing that can save Obama is another terror attack. And then there's a CNN reporter, Rick Sanchez, talking about what went on in, I believe, Uganda, where a bunch of Americans were killed and about 50-something people were killed. And he says, you know what? He's saying to a CIA officer, former CIA officer, as if they exist. You know, once you're in the company, you're a company man for life. But anyway, he's saying to, and Sanchez probably is one as well, frankly, but Sanchez, Rick Sanchez, reporter, showing us he's on the inside, kind of slips up a bit and says, you know, even though this is a horrible loss of life and even though some really good people were killed who were trying to do, you know, really good things, this is sort of a good thing because it reminds people around the world of just how evil and vicious these, you know, Muslim terrorists are. And again, the war on terror raptures meant to take our rights. It came from the Cold War and then the war on cold with the Soviet Union and the war on drugs and now the war on terror. And it'll be the war on green soon, on the people that object to this. Since the jump, they've been saying people that object to the global warming or climate change thesis, the man-made anthropogenic global warming thesis, are akin to Holocaust deniers. And, those Holocaust promoters have been soaking us in propaganda that conditions us to, you know, dislike people and dislike groups and know that we should and know that it might be easier on us if we do and marginalize them, much in the way they did in Germany to condition the German people to dislike Jews before, you know, hauling a bunch of them off and doing not nice things. And when you heard Webster Tarpley on the Guns and Butter radio show with Bonnie Faulkner from the 23rd of June, he's a genius, by the way. Webster Tarpley, TARPLEY.NET, is his website. He is the guy in the conspira game that is the most focused on solutions. I've heard him on the Alex Jones show, and, you know, Jones is, you know, and I love Jones, too. I play tons of Jones, and he's focused on solutions. But where Jones will sometimes say, my God, Webster, they're just totally raping us. They're totally killing us. Oh, my God. And Webster will say, you know, 75-year-old man, summa cum laude, rogue, academic badass. Yeah, well, but, you know, what are you going to do, right? So what we have to do is we have to pressure Congress, collateralize debt obligations. We need to tax those, Tobin tax. You pay taxes, you pay green taxes, you pay sales taxes. Let the financiers pay a 1% tax on their financial transactions. Just 1% could take care of everything because that's how much fictitious capital they're playing with. And he's off to the races. He doesn't dwell on the negative. He's used a phrase known as the optimism of the intellect and the pessimism of the intellect and the optimism of the will. And as I play F a protest here, to help close out the show, I'm just looking, road warrior level collapse imminent. Alex Jones says we must take corrective action now. And after 15 years in the game, you know, he's got an idea what he's talking about. It's worth listening. And as he mentions about his films, 9/11 Road to Tyranny, the first one that woke me up back in 2004. And it took me about a year to fully wake up, you know. So I understand where people are at in terms of wanting to deal with this rationally. You know, we're supposed to do little things. Oh, do the little things. And the problem with that is that it's not tactical. It's not practical. You can get fooled by little things, you know. While you're separating your paper from your plastic, from your metal, and putting them in different little bins and tins, or you're going to get fined, you know, and you think that that's somehow, in the big picture, going to, affect things positively, you're getting poisoned to death by fluoride, aspartame, GMO foods, and more. So you won't be around to enjoy the earth that you are supposedly trying to save. And your kids won't either, because the GMO foods sterilize second and third generation rats. And they test on rats because rats are fairly similar to people. And so on. So there are big moves we can make as individuals and big moves we can make in groups. But at this time in history, you know, George Orwell said it in 1984. In times of tyranny or whatever, telling the truth is a revolutionary act. And so telling the truth could mean going against the happy lies that fool us. You know, I just saw an article in Now Magazine about the July 10th, last Saturday, protest of 2,000 people wandering around Day of Action, demanding, that people, do something about the police thing. Well, You know, if they want to do that, they should have told people. But if they just get together, chant communist slogans, and wander off, then that's not going to do anything. If those 2,000 people had emailed their MPs, MPPs, city councilors, if they'd made flyers, if they handed them out, if they'd taken the time to break the whole, you know, protest thing down, you know, intelligently, then, you know, we'd have answers. So there are things that have been done, but look where we are. So let's think of something better, and let's just not default to the weakest that we can be when it comes to these issues. Let's not think, thanks to psychology and self-help and all these other things that convince us we are as opposed to we could be. Philosophy tells you what, you know, teaches you, you know, what you could be and gives you things to aim for. And psychology just tells you what you are and what you will be and what you will never be able to change. And so you got to choose. The secret to life is being cool and having balls, no matter what happens. That means if martial law happens, hey, be cool, have balls, handle it. If you lose your house, be cool. If you win the lottery, meet a pretty girl, meet a pretty boy. You know, be cool, have eggs. Be cool, have guts. Whatever. It doesn't matter. But anyway, food for thought. Have a great weekend, everybody. Mr. Bill Watson, Monsignor Watsoni, is up next with your four-hour jazz bungee experience. Shouting out Infowars.com. Shouting out TorontoTrueSeekers.com. Shouting out WhatYouWantToBelieveIn.com. Shouting out CuttingThroughTheMatrix.com. Shouting out VigilantCitizen.com. Shouting out NaturalNews.com. Shouting out ConspiracyCulture.com. Shouting out PressForTruth.ca. And many, many more websites where you can go to get yourself hit to this. But don't ask what you can do. Think of what you can do. And look at what other people have done. You know, because it's happening every day. The states is popping off. There are groups getting together and advocating as a group. And if you do that, then other atomized individuals in this culture will have to respect you because you're clicking up better than they are and for better reasons. And that's one to grow on. It's been the 15th of July, 2010. Have a fantastic day in the T-Dot and wherever you at, everybody. I'll see you next week.
Wanting on the act. There's a cognac bottle, we snuck it in, cause the beer that they were serving here was only tap. I'm biting, I fight dirty, you might get kicked in the nuts. You're frightened like this guy might hurt me. You're quite certain he's nuts. I've hit myself in the face harder. Play smarter, you may start a rope, but you need a chainsaw to dig your way out of. Go powder your nose, pussy. The louder you yell, the harder I slap the shit out of you hoes. You set it off, faggot, so now how do you suppose we settle it? Hit me in the nose, we'll see how it goes. So what the adrenaline's rushing through us just like a geyser gushing. Too much Budweiser in my blood. I'm strangling your windpipe for nothing. My signature's ligature marks. Look at you all big with your remarks. I swing a nice pick at your heart. At least that's what it feels like when I pick you apart and dig at you and break you down like a bitch that you are. The predicament starts when I